Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So there's a misconception that if you're single, you are incomplete, perhaps damaged, salvaged, and you won't be happy until you find your one. And that is not true. That is bullshit. It is a message that has been fed to us by media and advertising. The truth is, when you're single, you have the richest soil for growth. That's why I created this podcast. And unlike other podcasts, this one is host-driven, not guest-driven. That means I will be rotating health and wellness experts 3 times a week to give you the giant box of wellness crayons, not just the primary colors, so you can start building a meaningful life. It's time to give singlehood a cape. So today's host, Lindsay Burke. She and I go way back when I was working in addiction residential Malibu, driving my little motorcycle on PCH to help people with addiction, and she was on my team. I'm so happy that she is a part of this rotating host and experts for this podcast. Lindsay Burke is the founder of Lift Therapy, and she's a licensed therapist, behavior interventionist, coach, martial artist, yes, martial artist, a wife, a parent, and expert consultant on attachment, narcissism, and toxic relationships, as well as early childhood development. Yes, she does everything. And she believes that human connection is the best medicine and is committed to helping people heal by helping them develop healthy attachments with others. Her mission is to enhance the field of mental health by making support and resources more accessible to you in the form of psychoeducation, supportive programming, and individual therapy. Lindsay has served as a host for the Disney Plus show Reconnect and as an advisor and expert writer for various newspapers, podcasts, and radio shows such as the Chicago Tribune, Relation Up, P Therapy, Life and Style Magazine, Pop Sugar, and on and on and on. She is very talented. She's a powerful catalyst, and I hope you enjoy. Well, I know you're going to enjoy and get so much out of her episode today.
Hey, all, Lindsay Burke here, and I have the absolute pleasure of bringing Paul Chamberlain on today. He is a certified crisis advocate and coach, a husband and father. He's the creator and host of the podcast Smart, Funny, and Tortured. His passion is helping people shift their relationship with shame and find their true essence. And I love how you put it this way, get cozy with the better parts of their darker angels, which I think we all can relate to. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay, for having me. It's really good to be here.
Yeah, it's so great to have you. For the listeners out there who have not already heard Paul's story, first, you need to listen to episode 578 of the Angry Therapist podcast, where he tells his personal story, where you were at the height of your success, really, as a senior creative officer and entrepreneur. You were an award-winning expert in branding, and you were also doing a lot of event and entertainment production, and you were on the brink, if I remember this correctly, of a huge, huge game-changing project, or so you thought, when suddenly years of undiagnosed chronic illness and depression finally came to a head and almost ended things when you were having your own suicidal ideation. And I'm just so grateful that you are willing to share about this because just hearing your story, there are so many misunderstandings about depression and suicide. And one thing that really stood out to me, Paul, is how fortunately and unfortunately, many of us can function for a shockingly long time with these debilitating symptoms and with these feelings. And it can create its own barrier to seeking help, right? So, you know, before we popped on here, I did a little bit of, you know, the Google search. I did a little bit of the research a little bit to see about what the stats are looking these days. And we've got to talk about suicide. It was responsible for 48,000 deaths in 2021. This like blew me away with approximately 3.5 million people planning attempts, 1.7 million people attempting that year. I knew it was high. I knew it had gone up. But we have to talk about this in the sense of a crisis. This is personal to me. I've had my own experiences. You obviously shared yours. And so I kind of want to fast forward beyond your story a little bit and really talk about what's happening here, what your experience has been, what your expertise is, and dive a bit deeper today for our audience who might relate to that rock bottom. And we cannot talk about suicide without talking about depression and its deep, deep link to your bread and butter, which is really this debilitating shame. We don't even realize it. Sometimes it becomes normal to us, or we don't even recognize the symptoms. Can you talk a little bit more about how it can sneak up on us, how we can begin to identify shame as maybe a driving force in our life when we haven't quite put our finger on that or realized how much it's impacting our life?
Yeah. There's so much to absorb in that. And suicide is a disease. And just like a disease that's airborne, suicide is like that. There's been studies shown that when a member of a family or a friend commits suicide, there's a contagion. You'll often hear about it when it happens in high schools. There will be several others after that, or those brought very close to the brink. It does have a blast radius about it.
That's powerful, Paul. My clients, people have heard me speak, but we are such a social species. So to acknowledge the touch, the reach that one event like this can have.
There's so much to it. I mean, whether you ascribe to the metaphysical aspect of energy exchange and all that, or just like you said, just being social creatures, there's also the thing that when somebody does it, or when suicide becomes commonplace through an experience, there's sometimes people who are hiding it so well that see it happen. They're like, oh, well, the solution does work. Okay. This isn't aspirational. I could pull this off. And then what's so wicked about it is that there's almost a euphoric quality to the answer that it provides. It's like when you make the decision, when I was standing on the edge of a parking structure in downtown Vegas, there was a moment where I was like, holy shit, I'm actually here. My God, I think this, it could be, oh, by this time tomorrow, it could be over. And there is something incredibly insidious about that. And so addressing it, when I speak to people in crisis, I go to that point. I go to the touch points that nobody else talks about, that there are answers, that there is peace in suicide. Mm-hmm. Not the good stuff. Okay, let's just get that clear right now. But
we've got to be real about it.
But for those who do truly suffer from crippling depression, shame, abuse, actual situations in which there seems to be no way out, this is a ticket.
Relief.
Yeah. So that's, and when you come at it from that perspective with somebody of like, oh, don't waste your life, don't do this, you know, all the tropes that you hear, you've got so much to live for. Honest to God, you don't know. You don't know whether they have something to live for. You know, that's one of the things that they tell you in crisis training, and you know this, is there's two things you're never, ever supposed to say. One is, I know how you feel, because there's absolutely no way you could know how they feel. And two, it's going to get better, because there's no way you know if it's going to get better. So if you're just speaking from like, yeah, been in this hole, know it looks pretty sweet on the other side, let's find some options together. That's how, you know, been able to like pull out of the nosedive for that moment doesn't mean that it's, you know, it's not curative. So bit of a divergence off of the whole idea of how we get there, and this kind of explosion of suicide right now is, I mean, we can go back and we can blame it on COVID and we can blame it on economics and we can blame it on this. But what I truly believe is it is a combination of lack of purpose.
Middle-aged men. There is, that's one of the statistics in suicide, is that's one of the biggest populations of suicide are men 48 to 54. Mm. Is that you get these men who like, okay, I've done the wife, I've done the marriage, I've done the kids, I've done the job, now what? And then it's sort of like cast to your own devices. And we all know of men who make that part of their life ones of consumption, whether it's, you know, golf every day or drinking every day or bad decisions or just boredom. And there's no purpose anymore. And so that leads to immediate depression and going places that you shouldn't go. And oftentimes what's at the core of that is shame, is like, I should have done this. I should be doing this. Oh, the reason I'm here is because of this. And I've spoken about it before, but Carl Jung has a thing called The Afternoon, where he was incredibly prolific in the latter part of his life. And he referred to this time in somebody's life as the afternoon, where the sun is beginning to set, but it's not totally there. There's plenty of light to still get stuff done. But what you learned in your teens and 20s is no longer serving you. So you got to rewrite the book. Mm. And people don't know that. People don't know that once you reach a certain phase in your life, it's like, yeah, it's, you've depleted your database. Now it's time. There's, I think there's in tarot cards, there's the cups, and there's one that when you get the cups and it's upside down, it means that, and please, I know somebody's going to correct me on this, but I got it once I got the two of cups, and it means that my cup had filled up, it spilled over, emptied out to be upright again, to fill up again. That was the time of life that it was. So all this tumult in my life was my cups being emptied out because they were full and they needed to be dumped to receive again. People don't know that.
That's such an interesting concept. So there's an element of, it's not necessarily that you never fulfilled your purpose, but that your purpose has shifted, or that your needs have shifted, or your why has shifted. There's an element of this idea that sometimes something's expired, it sounds like, that it's already played out. So it doesn't necessarily mean that sometimes what happened prior was a bad thing, but you've already attained those goals. And so if you're not able to transition into this life, it's so interesting you say it that way, because I hear this all the time from empty nesters, where if they've spent their whole life, you know, building this career, supporting this family, and now it being parents, and that was their children were their why, and then their children go off and they're independent and they don't need them anymore, and all of a sudden, that's a very sensitive age for suicide, because now they've lost that why again, and there's an element of needing support during that transition from the world, and some understanding and some normalizing that's actually okay. That's a part of the process. That, you know, that doesn't mean life's over, but there's also, you're saying, an element of incompleteness with regards to identity that also takes place.
It is, because this goes back to that earlier point of just this slow burn, we're all suffering with shame. Mm-hmm. And we're just getting by. I'm fascinated by this one theory that came out, the region beta paradox, in that the paper was the quality of things just being okay. And it actually discovered that our healing was better and more complete when it was an immediate and incredibly impactful trauma. like we could come out the other side better.
Clear and
distinct, opposed to this stochastic, truncated death by a thousand cuts stuff where you're just like, it's all right. You know, bad relationships, but not horrible relationships. Bad jobs, but not a horrible job. And you just stay with it and it just wears you down over time. Yes. Because you're living in scarcity mindset or fear or shame or, you know, all these things that just keep you in this box from going, okay, what is my purpose? Because once you have your purpose, then discipline is organic. Then you have to get something done. You need to get something done. But when you're just living, it's, you know, I'll ride this out. And that's often, and I've found that to be incredibly pronounced in people of middle age now.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's really interesting? This just came to me as you were saying that too. There's that insidious element of internal denial. I don't know if I can say this correctly, or a cognitive dissonance. There's an element around shame of, again, it's not what I did, it's who I am that's flawed. But there's an element of, how do I put this? This something's wrong with me. There's something inherently flawed about my judgment of a situation or my inability to complete this or do this thing or be enough or attain. There's a lacking, there's a state of lacking that's driving it, that's underneath that. So no matter what the performance is or what the external experience is, if that's already the lens that they're seeing the world through, that we're seeing the world through, there's nothing that can satiate that.
There's nothing. No. And I mean, oftentimes people with, you know, I talk about that and, you know, the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is, you know, I did bad. Shame is I am bad. And oftentimes I'm like, when you're really in it, you're like, I wish I could pick a binary between good or bad. But most people, when they're in truly in the throes of shame, it's just like, I'm just taking up space. I'm not even worthy of an opinion. I'm just taking up space. And until I get asked to leave, or until I leave myself, this is a horrible place to be. It's, you wish you could pick I'm bad. I'm just a bad person and I'm just going to, fine, I'll own it. No, with shame, it's just this listless, again, I'm just taking up space.
Yeah. And to make this really obvious for our audience too, how does it show up? What are some of the behaviors that you've seen in yourself and your clients, and how does this begin to kind of manifest and become a cyclical place that people are stuck in and self-sabotaging place? You know, how, if someone might not necessarily identify with feeling shame, but they might identify with these kind of experiences.
It is how you hold yourself and how you see yourself. And if there is anything that in your head causes your shoulders to, it causes you to go into a defensive position, whether your shoulders go down, you don't expose yourself to social settings, you restrain yourself, you're constantly restraining yourself, your light is not fully shining. And you know that at 10 o'clock at night when you're like, I should have done that, or I should have, you know, when you berate yourself, that is just shame with its feet up on a desk inside your head, just laughing, going, got it, got you. I mean, I refer to shame as a Vichy government that's been installed in your head by trauma. Is just like, trauma has come in, done its damage, left town, and left these bastards behind to run your life. And that's where I want to work with people on shifting that power dynamic, is recognizing, going, you have these constructs in place that are diminishing you constantly. You're not letting it happen. Just take this off of yourself. You're not doing this to yourself. This is the residue of trauma. that's there. It's like, okay. The other metaphor that I use, and I think you and I talked about it, was the Komodo dragon one.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Komodo dragon, big, huge, 7 to 9 foot wedge of muscle lizard that looks fearsome. And you think that the way that it kills, it attacks, wrestles like an alligator and does that. No, what it does is it lets the flesh from the previous kill rot in its mouth. So when it bites you, it immediately gives you sepsis. You are infected, and then just lets you go off, lets that goat just run into the bushes, and then comes back a couple of days later when it's dead and gets it. That's how I envision trauma. Trauma comes in, bites you, infects you, leaves, and then you're left with shame for the rest of your life until you get rid of that infection.
Yes. Oh, that's, that just hits the nail on the head. And how, you know, this leads me right into wondering how this feeds codependency, how this feeds your relationship dynamics. You seen? How does it begin to show up there?
You're not a complete partner because you're relying on the other partner to complete you, because you have this sucking chest wound, this hole that will not be filled up by you, that has been left by shame. So the positive affirmations, the empathy, this is another thing that I rail against. I don't see empathy as an effective treatment for shame, because you can get hooked on it. It is a cost prohibitive drug. If you have a partner that's always telling you, it's okay, honey, you're good, you're better than that, you're that, you're going, that's just, you want to mainline that shit all the time. And you're not addressing the whole thing, calling your friends every day. You know, there's certain things that you do in the code. It just doesn't have to be a partner. It could be a codependent relationship with, you know, any body or bodies around you. And you're only wanting to be seen. You're wanting to be heard. You're wanting to be empathized with. And that's just
beautiful. Yes. It can be.
That's morphine at stage 4. Yeah. Yes. That's a palliative effect.
Yes.
And the other one that I rail against too is self-compassion. I kind of laugh at that when I watch, you know, and I don't mean any disrespect, but as somebody who suffered shame that almost is, you know, Carol Neff and the whole self-compassion movement, it's like, the last person I'm going to be compassionate to is myself, because I'm ashamed of myself. It's like, piss off. I'm not going to be nice to myself. And I get a little fiery about it, but I'm like, okay, I can sit in a room, I can meditate, I can do breathing, and I can see myself for the wonderful human being and dad that I am. But you know, when it comes down to it, I've got to be
my armor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an element of, again, that cognitive dissonance that this is right. This was fact. This is fact. It's embedded in there so deeply.
It's, dare I say, they're privileged modalities that if you do have friends or a partner that can give you empathy, that's great. A lot of people don't have anybody. A lot of people are so hurting, they can't even properly receive empathy too.
Right.
And the self-compassion thing, if you are centered enough to give yourself a healthy exchange internally of self-compassion, great. But there's a lot of people with other pressures that may, you know, deform that. And so, yeah, I think
totally.
It's...
And it actually makes you more vulnerable. I love that you put that way. I remember having a mentor saying, you know, a long time ago, that our self-worth, you know, doesn't come from what we receive from others. You know, not that we didn't obviously need that when we were young, but now as adults, it comes from what we're able to do and produce and to perform, you know, to provide for ourselves, not for someone else. Mm-hmm. There's an element of the self-worth and self-esteem comes from what we're able to give and produce and see ourselves capable of.
And yeah, that's
so
when
this element of you know, needing someone else to correct it for us. It's just, not that I think it's entirely black and white, but it's, yeah, it's tapping into, you know, another source that's also flawed and has limits.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The scariest self-test that I gave myself was when I actually had a friend, you know, it was a toxic friendship and was trying to hurt me, but it also woke me up, said, you know, I was literally railing going, I'm trying so hard to hold this matrix together of the family, of the job. I'm trying to hold us all together. And she looked at me and just with venom, just said, well, what would happen if you didn't? What happened if it just all fell apart? And I know she's trying to hurt me, but it also caused me to think, it's like, okay, what am I going to be? Will I survive this? If it all went away, am I going to be okay? And that kind of caused me to cock my head and go, all right, it's time to do an inventory because I do want to kind of survive this. Am I going to be okay on the other side? And that's kind of the first time when shame goes, whoa, wait a minute. This something just changed. You know, the wind just shifted. Those kind of self-empowerment moments are integral to this whole process.
Huge. Yes. I'm listening to this woman, mixed feelings about her and her operations, but Elena Cardone always talks about building the empire. But I've always kind of translated that, not just externally when it comes to building businesses and, you know, building your village and your community up, but also that idea of it from the inside. You know, if it took an empire can't be, you know, look at some of the empires in China that just survived for years. I mean, just centuries, because they were so, you know, equipped to downfalls, and they could handle war, and they could handle famine, and they could, because they were built in such a way that they could handle some of the biggest, you know, apocalypses of that time, of those times. And so creating, someone who has that internal resilience to not just when things are well and they have some interrupts in life, but if something were to fall apart, to be able to say, oh, but we're going to be okay because of how we're built and structured.
Yeah. And I think our job is to put and you mentioned the one word, and you mentioned this whole idea. There's two things in what you said that I love to deal with in, and that is metaphor and analogy. Like you referred to the Chinese dynasties and the strength of those empires, and that, and the other one is resilience. And so you can talk to somebody and go, you need to be more resilient. You need to, you know, you need to be able to bounce back. But then you're like, think of these empires that started like this and they were resilient. Your brain moves to like, okay, I can wrap my brain around fable and story and metaphor and the hero's journey and all that. And it's like, okay, I'm in. You can inspire with that kind of stuff. And that's what I love working in. And then when you expose people to vocabulary like resilience, post-traumatic growth, you know, and inform them of stories that, like, you know, as a matter of fact, I posted on my Instagram, this Boris Pasternak quote, and it was great. And it was, I don't like people who have never fallen or stumbled. Their virtue is lifeless and it isn't of much value. Life hasn't revealed its beauty to them.
Yeah.
And getting people to think, going, yeah, you fucking up, you being in these places is making you a better, more interesting person. Like when I truly deal with somebody
now
who is rock bottom in crisis, like they are, the next call that they're going to make is going to be to 911 or to get a relative to take them to the hospital. When it's that bad, I will greet that with enthusiasm. I will greet that with joy going, dude, you did it. We're here. Yeah. Bucket list. You're rock bottom. Yes. Okay. It's you did it. This one's going in the memoirs, and they're completely like, wait, what? What are you saying to me?
I'm not sure if you knew my life is shit right now.
Yeah. And I'm like, done. I go, you've done it. Okay. So let's go from here.
You've now officially experienced one of the hardest things you'll ever experience in your whole life.
Way to go. This was epic. I mean, you are a hot mess right now. Congratulations.
I love it, Paul. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So. I mean, that's I think, you know, my background's in MMA, and I remember thinking and having a coach early on who would talk about, you know, early on in training, you would think that all the training would be throwing punches and learning how not to fall and learning how to counter, you know, throws and learning how to, you know, stay on your feet and all that stuff. No, the first two fucking years is drill after drill after drill after drill on your back. It's landing.
That's
it. How to land from every, I'd have an instructor throw me up and like, you know, I'd have to figure out how to contort my body in a certain way to land on the ground. And his big thing was, the ground is not the scariest place to be, because when you're on the ground and your back is up, all you have is up. You got no, you can't fall any further. Your ass is on the ground. All you can see is up, and that is opportunity.
And we are in that, and having an instructor like that is priceless. And I also teach at the university level, and I get seniors, and I introduced into my syllabus two lectures solely on failure and resilience.
Yeah.
And I got seniors in a business school, and I asked them, I'm like, have you ever studied failure and resilience? And this is a business school, and these are wanting to be entrepreneurs, and never in the course of their education have they applied academically their mindset to understanding failure, even though it is an essential intrinsic part of being an entrepreneur. So we're not even prepared. We don't even have this in our vocabulary that, I mean, there's tropes and there's memes that go up on the path of success and all that stuff, but nobody knows that it's like, you could lose a partner. Mm-hmm. You could lose everything. You probably will. And you'll lose time, you'll lose friends, but what's your purpose? And are you prepared to do that? And what are you going to do when you do? All that stuff. And it completely like, okay, this is serious. I'm just not going to be a unicorn and sell my company after 3 years. It's like, no, you're probably going to have six that are going to gut you like a fish. And then you may have that.
This is so great. I never know where the conversations are going to go in these podcasts. And I'm just loving that we went there, because what we're really talking about is this deep connection with the way that we interpret and translate failure in relation to shame, because I think they are just, I mean, they're BFFs right there. And really, when we're talking about the underpinnings of where shame comes from, there's a deep aspect of, at some point during an early primitive experience of your life, their failure and being imperfect and being uncertain and being incomplete was communicated to you as being unacceptable, and how that impacts your ability to translate how real life happens, you know, which is falling on your face constantly. If it's been anything like my life, it's been a hot mess. So it's just, you know, it's fucking up regularly and being disappointing people and disappointing yourself and not knowing what you're doing and losing all your money and, you know, having people mad at you and saying the wrong things and, you know, just, you know.
Yeah.
So there's an element of how you translate that that's also deeply related to how much shame you carry into your future and how that builds your self-assessment. It builds your self-identity, you know, over time.
It does. And it's, you know, dealing with shame and addressing shame, it is a blanket term. And you literally walk into a wine cellar of shame. I mean, it's like there are multiple varieties, different, you know.
Which one you want to drink tonight?
Exactly. So, you know, the stuff that you talk about, generational, racial, societal, those are the big ones that impose, that are structures that are imposing shame on you at just a mammoth level that affect you, that affect generations, that literally change your genetic expression from one generation to the next. And then there is the, you know, the sexual, the financial, the all the other ones that come into that. And it's, and going back to the failure stuff, we look at it like one and done. Something happens to us, we're out. Okay, we're flawed. We obviously can't get membership to this club that we think we belong to because we've done this.
And that's already decided on. This
it's already decided.
Of this behavior has already been set. And by that definition, I shall judge myself.
Shame requires you to sit down and shut up. That is what shame does to you. You asked, like, how can you tell? If you feel like something inside of you is telling you to sit down and shut up, we don't need to hear from you, that's shame, full volume.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. That just gives me chills. Well, and you know, there are some that would argue, so I'm going to play that devil's advocate because I get
that. Yeah. Come on. Now it gets good.
This All person right. that would talk about how there are elements of shame that are not necessarily, I don't like using the term good, but there's the purpose in having shame embedded into our internal spectrum of emotions and experiences and feelings. That doesn't it help you self-correct? Doesn't it, you know, help you adapt to the societal standards? Blah, 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 blah. And that's tricky, obviously, too, because the world has become so integrated. You know, that makes sense when you're living in this one little community that hasn't had access to any other ways of participating in the world. And so they've got, this is how we function. And if we go outside of that, we don't function well. But it sounds like even those definitions are starting to be questioned and changed. And to what point, you know, to what extent is shame beneficial versus, you know, is this binary? Is this more complex?
Yeah, it is. And I'm so glad you brought it up because this is, I love this side of the coin too, is being shameless is pejorative. You don't want to be around somebody who's shameless because that's somebody that doesn't have any guardrails. That's somebody that's probably morally compromised. It's, toddler. You know, you just don't want it to. Yeah. What's that?
I always think of a toddler, you know, just.
They just don't regard for anybody's experience. Yeah, you don't want to be. And so shame is a necessary part of the human condition, full stop. But like all the other things, and we often think of things as binary, good and bad, but our whole body, our existence is made up of harmony and balance. And so shame is a necessary function. And so is cellular regeneration in our body, but that goes out of control. That turns into cancer. Right. We need a healthy gut biome with candida, but candida overgrows and that's bad. We need shame, but shame overgrows and that's bad. So, I mean, if you think of it as a body system that has completely gone out of control, that's how you can think of shame. And so that's why I use the term, you're not becoming shameless, you're bringing shame to heal. Like, imagine shame.
Like applying it appropriately.
Just imagine shame with a rusty chain around its neck, and you have a leash and you yank it and you get it to sit next to you on your left side and go, stay there. Warn me if something's coming, but you stay there now. And that's what, and just shifting that power dynamic, because shame is, should be an early warning system. It should be
interesting.
Oh, you know what? Maybe I really shouldn't wear that to the beach. You know what I mean? If you want to be funny about
it's
it,
like a feedback, it's sort of like, it's a feedback.
It's a feedback. It's like, yeah, you might want to think about that. You might want, you know, you might be, and it was installed to keep us from taking too much food from the communal food source of whatever tribe or community we lived in that may harm the group. And so, yeah, that's what shame was designed to do, was to keep you in check so we could all function. So we all wouldn't run red lights for thousands of years.
Right.
And so, and then it just overgrows.
It makes it complex, which we hate. We like to keep things really black and white and simple. But I think that's so important. That's such a great example about the gut biome, or about if we think about our community or our village as being the gut. And adapting so that you're able to function, but also it means it's one different for everybody. So that means it's going to be different for every group you're in or setting that you're in. And there's an element of responsibility around that adaptability. And instead of letting it overgrow and become a thing where you're silent, it's something that you're responsive to. But then that can also shift. You know, I can throw my foot up on the table and you wouldn't be offended at all during this conversation. But if I went to Thailand and did that, you know, that might be received very differently as an insult. This idea of shame being a way of communicating social safety, really.
Yeah.
It's social safety. But then it's really that overgrowth of shame that becomes the thing that prevents someone from being able to continue to perform out their humanity.
Yeah, this is why I like the work that's being done. And Rena, the coach, who works on sexual intimacy. And these studies that are being done of empowering women who have been survivors of abuse through exposure to kink and using that. So they're taking something that was shameful, rejiggering the approach of it and re-exposing it to it under a completely different social construct to empower them. And that's exactly what it is that if we look at shame as something that serves us, that's something that should work for us, and it's just become entirely too fat on its own power and owns you. And we're taught to achieve a passive position in the face of shame. You are shamed. You know, it's aimed at you. You are shamed. Now sit down and shut up. And there are very few things in the human condition that do that to you, that just nullify you immediately.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. Must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Well, and then moving back to that place of, you hit that rock bottom, you know, that you're there, that point of hopelessness, that point of worthlessness, where the quicksand has taken hold, you don't have anything to grab onto, you don't see anything you can grab onto in that sense. Not just that they have nothing left. They've got nothing to live for. They've got no purpose, but that they are nothing. When someone hits that point, where do you begin with them? Where did you begin? What can they take hold of when right now they're at a loss, and that's why they're there?
It's greeting them, like I said, as I did, greeting them with enthusiasm and kind of the aspect of the rebirth is getting that in their head and going, there is no panacea. You are not going to get on a plane and go to Central America and do an ayahuasca ceremony and be okay on the other side. You are not going to, now go through therapy with one therapist for the rest of your life and be okay. It's going to be multiple modalities of you building a new life. And that's exciting. Okay. That's really exciting because you have nothing now. You now get to build from whole cloth. And communicating the potential and the opportunity that's in front of them, because you have fucked up and scorched the earth and been to a place that you don't think you can get out of. And that's also a place of rebirth. And I'm here for it. Okay. I get that. And, it goes to that clip that I sent you, the one from the West Wing, that will be my story and my inspiration. And, if I can, I'll share it. It's a great scene from West Wing, and it's a story that's been told many times, sort of a fable, but guy falls down a hole. And a priest walks by and he's like, "Hey, Padre, can you help me out?" And the priest writes a prayer and throws it down the hole. Doctor walks by, "Hey, Doc, can you help me get out of this hole?" Doctor writes a prescription, throws it down the hole. Then his best friend walks by and says, "Hey, man, can you help me get out of the hole?" His friend crawls down in the hole with him and he goes, "What the hell are you doing? We're both down in the hole." And his friend says, "Yeah, but I know the way out."
Yes.
And so that is my mission, is to be like, yeah, I know not the way out, but I know a way out. There is a way out. It's going to be a bitch. It's going to be hard, but we're going to build data points. Okay. Not mistakes. These are data points so you can get out of here. And,
you might slip down back into this hole a few times too.
Exactly. But... yeah. Yeah.
But there's up. You can see up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's huge. So letting them know that. Yeah. And I think that you're saying something that's so important too, that I think there's an element of personal responsibility that we have to take. We can't be rescued. That someone can't necessarily always pull us out. They can sit with us while and let us know we're not alone. We've got to take the steps ourselves. But there's also that element of seeking that support and seeking those resources and utilizing resources. And that's hard to do when you feel unworthy.
Yes. And that's where reaching out to therapists and trained crisis people who may be in your particular place of socialization. I received my certification for crisis advocacy through the LGBTQ center here in Vegas. So specifically dealing with that segment of the population, those people are going there. They are not going to, city, county services. They're going to where they think their people are. And there's a lot of power in that. And if you do have the ability to go, "I want to go someplace where I probably think somebody has suffered just like me."
Yeah.
That is a huge leg up too.
Yes. Yes. And they don't have to understand what you're going through to
no, they don't. They
just sit with you in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And having some of those lifelines, that is the starting place sometimes, is just, is knowing that
and acknowledging how hard and how ugly. And, you know, for somebody to, there, I don't think there's been anything more powerful than me and some of the crisis situations of sitting with somebody and just being like, geez, man, this is good. I got to hand it to you. This is some epic shit. and kind of chuckling and them just like, okay, yeah, I know. And I'm like, it's okay, but hats off to you. And
yeah.
And that brings it back to the human experience of like, this is, and then the richness of life starts to show itself, because up until this point, you've been living in how you think you should present yourself.
There.
Yeah. There.
And how much more beautiful it is when you, and I think you're actually just, oh, just gives me chills. You're hitting the nail on the head, which I think is that underbed of shame, which is the absence of your humanity, that when shame is built, it's undermining your humanity and your allowance to be human.
Your light. Yeah. It's,
and it's just and
taking,
being
it's
integral.
Just taking your light.
It just steals your everything about your soul that and hides and collapses on everything, suffocates out, snuffs out everything that is what makes you uniquely human and imperfect and just a piece of dirt in space.
It shifted for me, and this is what, if I can help one other person feel this way, it shifted for me when I finally said, enough. I didn't say, oh, I'm worthy, or I'm better than this, or I'm not deserving of this shame. It was when I said, enough. And it's that act three in all of our favorite movies is when the hero is bloodied and dirtied and down for the count and stands up and says, enough, I'm going to, you know, there's a reason that, you know, is, you know, people may call it, you know, juvenile or trite, but there's a reason that, and if you see it on YouTube, there's a YouTube video of the audience's reaction to the end scene in Endgame, and where Thanos is beating Thor to a pulp, and then the hammer flies into Captain America's hands and the big reveal that he can hold the hammer, the audience loses its mind. I mean, it's literally, you can't hear the screen. And that is a visceral reaction, whether it is goes back thousands of years to talking about mythology or that. Humans respond to that person being so down and out, but then rising back up. And when you can feel that in yourself going, I got a little bit more fight in me.
Yes.
Nobody's going to help me. And you know what? I don't want anybody's help because it's gotten me shit so far. So I'm going to shift the power back to me. And that's hard to do. And if you have support to do that, all the better. But yeah, that's, and what's been so funny is and women have been incredibly receptive to that message. It's just like, oh yeah, all right, we ride at dawn, let's go, I'm done with this shit, let's go. And
I think any woman who's given birth at least I had my daughter without drugs, and yet you hit that, it forces you. And I'd had some other close to points, but that was definitely one where nobody can help me here but me. And you realize there was a little more left in there that I didn't think I had. I think everybody hits some of those moments in their life. If not early, they do late, but I don't think we get out of life without a couple of them.
No,
there's few of us.
It is hard, and that's what I am constantly reminded of in this kind of work and meeting some beautiful people who I am always struck by, and this is a horrible, this is a horrible note to hit, but I am always struck by and humbled just how much suffering there is under the bedspread of life. Just what's lurking underneath what you see every day and everybody else walking on the street and interacting. And then when it's pulled back, just the amount of low grade raw nerve suffering is just yeah. astounding.
And then the resilience from it, that people will survive.
Yes.
And can survive some of it. That's it's
yeah.
that it can get that bad and people can still survive it.
And getting somebody to imagine that, okay, all that energy you're putting into just keeping a lid on it. Okay, now let's focus it to just getting it out and getting it under control.
Yeah. Yes. Interesting. Yeah. What if we let it, I mean, back to what she said, what you were saying was that, what if we just let it all fall apart? What if we just let it all fall apart? What if we mm-hmm. let that all just be what it is, which is a mess?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And we rebuild from there and just let it all burn down. Yeah.
You get me fired up, Lindsay. I just start going off on this.
I know. This was great stuff. Well, Paul, this is a perfect place to end, because I think we really hit the high notes and I'm just so grateful for you being on the show today. This is just beautiful. And I'm grateful. God, I'm grateful for the work you do, because I wish we could clone you into a couple more per state.
Well, likewise. Same thing for what.
Yeah. What thank you so much. And we are going to go ahead and bring this episode to a close. But if you guys want to follow Paul, I want to point you in the direction of his Instagram at smartfunnytortured. Reach out to him through his website. It's also smartfunnytortured.com. And of course, guys, you've got to listen to his podcast. He has some incredible guests on. I haven't even had a chance to listen to them all. I've got a few that are already on my queue that have their own stories of overcoming a lot of shame and their own just astounding life challenges as well. And you also offer one-on-one sessions yep. as well as groups. And keep an eye out for any upcoming retreats that he's going to be hosting and speaking at. And of course, check out my website. I've got some new courses and guides coming up over the next few weeks. And you can, of course, follow me at Lift Therapy. And I did want to say this, if any of you are in crisis and need support right away, please call. Please call. There are people like Paul on the other end. There are people like me on the other end who have been there. So you can call 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. These are totally normal people who just understand, they won't necessarily understand what you're going through, but they understand how bad it can get. And they're then, like you said, they're there for it. They're there for it.
They're there for it.
And, yep. and these are highly trained professionals who will hold your hand while you combat your current reality, which is sometimes it really is shit. No yeah. one can sugarcoat that. So you don't have to do it alone. And I think that's what's important, is we don't have to do it all alone. The work is ours to do. But there are people out there who have had their own support. I've had my own support. And so there's no, you don't have to be afraid of asking for it. And thank you all for listening. And I look forward to connecting with you all next week. Thanks again, Paul.
Thank you, Lindsay. This was wonderful. Thank you for the time.
Of course.
I hope that episode was helpful. Hey, listen, if you want to share your singlehood journey, if you've gone somewhere, come back, if you have revelations and wisdom, please share your story. It's going to help other people. Nothing makes us feel more connected than hearing other people's stories. So just send me the audio of your story, and you can just record it directly from your phone and email it to theangrytherapist@gmail.com. Also, if you want our Single on Purpose newsletter, go to singleonpurpose.life. That's singleonpurpose.life. You will get tools and articles and other people's stories, and also Zoom links to private gathers. So if you want to join our community, go to singleonpurpose.life. Thank you for listening. Be well. We hope you tell a friend. Hey, before you go, I want to invite you to the Single on Purpose private community online. It's off of social media, no ads, no algorithms. We got forums, we got live groups, we got webinars, and we have social hangs. We also have offline in-person hangs happening soon. So check us out. Go to singleonpurpose.life. That's singleonpurpose.life, and I will see you inside.